The Park City Council meets Thursday for the regular meeting. In the studio with a preview, I have Park City Manager Matt Dias along with Housing Manager Jason Glidden. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Let's see. First, Matt, Park City Librarian Adrian Warr is giving a council an annual update. Last year, the library went fine-free. Any consequences to that?
None that we've known of, actually. It's been very, very positive. The reception in the community has been favorable. And believe it or not, I think the silver lining is we haven't lost any money, I'm told, by doing this. People are very responsive and respectful of the policy. But this is something that we do every year. The library board and the library director come in and meet with council, and I think it's really a success story. It's the fourth year since the major renovation that we did several years ago. And for all intents and purposes, it's just really nice to see a vision become a reality in terms of creating a community living room and all of the wonderful programming there, and sort of year over year increasing visitation.
Yeah, that's what it looks like, is that we're seeing more people actually use the library.
It's exceptional. Yeah. Again, it's sort of when a vision becomes a reality. And the construction process was long and hard, and it was a historic building, but you know, our organization was very, very committed to it. And all sorts of new programming as a result, programming for children, youth, and teens, substance abuse programming. We have a digital center where people can use digital computers and all sorts of technology equipment. And, you know, it's really a facility that encompasses the full circle of life. People are there with children. We have seniors, all sorts of workshops, and it really did turn out well.
Any other highlights from the report?
Well, Mary Schlosser, who's been on our library board for years, and Adrian were honored by the Utah Library Association, so there will be a little keynote of that. And a lot of that has to do with the work in the library. Fine Free was obviously sort of the big highlight over the year, but we're just overwhelmed. This is a wonderful facility for the community, and it really is neat to see it come a reality.
Okay. Let's see. One staff communication report discussing the bus stop inventory and accessibility study. Can you just remind us why we did this study?
Yeah, I think over time, at least for the last 5 or 6 years, we've really had to focus on other priorities when it came to transit. We've been prioritizing converting our fleet from a diesel fleet to an electric fleet. We've been converting technology to use apps and different types of software to make it more predictable for riders, and then we've been expanding our services in the county. And unfortunately, one byproduct of that is sometimes quality of bus stops and other things. And so now that we're sort of at a place where I think we currently we're not intending any additional expansion, we're sort of looking inward. And so we're going to be making sure that the bus stops have Wi-Fi and that they're ADA accessible and they have lighting and that they have shade. So this is more of a quality control measure, but something that we know we need to look at going forward, particularly if we're asking people to get out of their cars and ride the bus. We want to make sure they're not standing in the rain to the extent possible. And we've got several stops in particular where the bulk of our ridership originates from, or is a destination or an origin. And so we want to make sure we upgrade those facilities.
You may be aware of these, maybe not, but there was a person who took his own inventory of Park City bus stops and put it on YouTube. I mean, they were pretty derogatory videos, just talking about not only the dirty windows, but not being able to get to them, the ashtrays inside the shelters. And there are a lot of stops based on his reporting that shows that they are not in great condition. So whose responsibility is that? Is if they're even in the county, is that the city's or is that the county's responsibility to take care of those?
Well, it's both, quite frankly. We have a shared responsibility, and I was informed that we have over 251 bus stops in our system today. So there's over 251 different locations throughout the community. And we think that this is a quality control measure. We can do better, and we're committed to doing better. We have just been so aggressively expanding our system and trying to update technology, update our fleet, that this hasn't been the focus of our attention. But I think that as things move along and they progress, you'll see this become more and more our focus, where particularly for things like shade and making sure that they're ADA accessible, that the signage is appropriate, and that they're clean and sanitary. That aligns with our kind of our brand and the quality of our brand, and so I think we're committed to that.
Yeah. The city will be improving two highly used bus stops, those at Fresh Market and the Park Avenue condos this summer. What kind of improvements are we talking about?
Well, in particular, the size of the sidewalks there we feel are insufficient, as well as the size of the bus shelter. I don't think there's a day that goes by that we see people sort of forced to stand out in the elements, and particularly the sidewalk there is very, very narrow. So Our primary goal is public safety. We want to make sure that it's safe, and then we want to make sure that the people who are choosing to ride the system are treated well, and they're warm or out of the element or out of the heat when they're there waiting for the facilities. And so we're doing both sides of the road. Don't have an estimate in my head yet on the numbers. We're obviously going to work on the team with that and hope to get some financing from some walkability money that we have, some walkability improvements, and some transit money.
So are you going to have a priority list, knowing where you pick up or drop off, or pick up most of the people, and that's going to determine that shelters get built there?
It'll be a culmination of things, actually. So ridership will be a major, major focus of the prioritization exercise. But then we also have other goals about ADA accessibility goals, safety goals. There may be stops where we need lighting in certain areas, and it may not be a high ridership location, but it may be in an area that we feel that there's a public safety element. So we have a ranking and scoring system. I hasten to say it's almost a 200-page report, but we do have 251 different bus stops, and so there are a variety of factors that we're going to evaluate when we're going through the prioritization exercise.
City staff is requesting additional funding to the Future IQ for the Park City Vision 2020 services. What's this for?
Well, we've embarked on a year-long visioning process that's culminating. This month, and we've really enjoyed working with this facilitator. They just have a very interesting qualitative and quantitative methodology. And visioning can sometimes be criticized for just being this nebulous exercise where people go out and really just say they want it all, but it lacks this level of pragmatism. But this group really pushes the group hard and pushes our community hard, and will be pushing to get to an action plan. And so we have asked them to come back several additional times to run more focus groups, to meet with Lodging Association and the Chamber and all sorts of different stakeholders and interest groups. So we have caused more expense. And then we're also interested in having further discussion about this notion of a sustainable tourism focus group. And so we're actually just asking this group to do more work, and that's the reason we're coming in for the change order.
Okay, so the $25,000 has been spent, or has... you've already kind of tapped into that, or
no? So
this
the sustainable
will be for work future
for future work, right? So we're going to have an additional focus group. We're bringing the think tank back together, and then we hope to have the sustainable tourism exercise conducted. But that will be a council decision. So council has given us sort of a head nod that they're interested in these additional exercises, and staff is coming back with this contract amendment to make sure it aligns with what they desired.
Okay, so this February 11th event happening, I mean, what do we hope to accomplish then?
Right, so this is where we're going to be testing sort of what I'll call the six pillars. Right now, working with Future IQ and the community and the think tank, there's been sort of narrowing in on these six pillars. And I don't think they'll be surprising. Economy, tourism, transportation, equity and affordability, environment, and regional affairs. And so, just being around this community long enough, none of those are surprising. But I think our effort on the 11th is to really help define those and get closer to an action plan. So actionable items when we're implementing policy that staff and city council and the community can point to and associate with and know that it was a byproduct of the visioning exercise.
Okay, let's bring Jason into the conversation here. Park City will be transferring some of its affordable housing units to new owners. It looks like three of the Woodside Park Phase 1 units have been matched with applicants, and then one at Silver Star there on Three Kings Drive. So what about the other four Woodside units?
We're in the process right now of matching those units. the process, we've totally revamped the process from last time, and we've gone out to a third party to do that. And it takes time. We, sent out requests for full applications to the first set or group of folks, and that was in an effort to reduce the amount of work, unnecessary work for folks that maybe are lower down on the list. So we're only requesting full applications from that first set. We went through that first set, now we're on to our second set, due to the fact that there were some deferrals that for folks that just said, at this time I'm not ready. And we expected that, because when we went out to advertise for these pre-applications, we said, if you have an interest in the next couple of years, to go ahead and put your name in. So, so we're still going through that process. We've got four more units to award, and we're hoping that that process should be done in the next week or so.
So how much are these selling for?
They range, the the one bedroom unit there is at $205,000 approximately, and then they go up from there. The townhomes at $359,000, and then we have two attainable units, and the one attainable unit is just under I think it's $498,000 for the one, and then the other one is about $550,000.
Okay, and those are three bedroom?
They are, yeah, absolutely. Well, one's three bedroom and one's two bedroom with an unfinished basement.
Okay, and they all, the wood side, they all have the attachment units, the accessory units?
All the townhomes do, yes. Okay. All the townhomes have that that unit and or those attachment units. And then also we've developed quite a bit of storage space down in the basement for a lot of for the units. So much more than we've done for any other, anticipating that is a need in the Park City area. People have a lot of toys, and we want to make sure we give them enough space to do that and help to encourage alternative transportation, too, especially in that area of town.
All right. The city held the housing selection process back in December, and some 200 people entered the lottery. Can you talk about those people who applied? I mean, any themes there? I mean, are we talking about the first responders, the teachers, the folks that you were really hoping to target?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. You know, as we've used a third party, they have that information they'll be turning over to us. We have seen some of it, and we've actually are starting that analysis right now, because that is the really important part for me, to be honest with you, is looking at that so we can better tailor our program to the needs of the community. But we will be able to identify, you know, as far as employers go, are they owning or renting right now? Because that was a question we asked. But more specifically, what's the family size? So we can look at unit size and develop the right unit size in the future. And also, you know, as far as AMI goes, you know, are we hitting the mark of where we're pricing at, or, you know, do we need to adjust that?
Okay. And then in terms of parking them for those three-bedroom units, I mean, we didn't build these with the new amendments that we're looking at, or I think got approved. But so how many parking spots do we have for a three-bedroom unit?
So it was built under the master plan development, the regular master plan development. So that was one space per unit, which was required. We actually have a couple additional spaces there. So I believe we have 12 spaces overall in that parking lot for them. And it will be up to the HOA how to work out a parking program on that.
Okay. And then what happens to all of the, I don't know, dozens, hundreds of people who remain on the waiting list?
Yeah. So, you know, we obviously are excited that we're going to continue to develop new projects. And as we do, that wait list will be used to identify buyers. We also have, you know, quite a bit of units that actually come up throughout the year. And we're, you know, we want to have a conversation with council, but we feel that this wait list might be the best way to start identifying buyers for individual units that come up throughout the year. It's a much more equitable way of awarding these homes, and also takes a little bit of the burden off the owner. You know, all they have to do is contact us, let us know they have an interest in it, and we can take it from there and help them to identify a buyer.
Okay. And then the requirements here, I mean, do they have to have 20% down on these, or?
No, not at all. And that's, it really is up to the buyer to work with their the financial institutions and the lenders. But there are definitely programs out there that don't require that 20%, especially for first-time home buyers. So there's definitely programs that will help them to avoid that large sometimes of a challenge of getting that down payment.
Yeah. So, like for the one bedroom for $205,000, I mean, what does a mortgage payment look like on something like that?
You know, it really depends on the person buying it, because, you know, it depends on their credit and, you know, all that stuff. So I couldn't necessarily quote you a mortgage price on that.
But our interest rate's pretty good?
Yeah, from what we've seen, I wouldn't be able to quote you today what the exact rate is, but they are good right now. So it is a good time for people to be buying.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention on?
No, we're excited to have folks moving in, and just asked for the rest of people on the list to be patient as we move through this. I know there's a lot of people that are, you know, waiting for word, and we are working our way through the list as quickly as possible, and we'll go from there.
All right. No staff report on it, but there will be a weekly legislative update given, Matt. I mean, what have you guys been keeping tabs on?
well, it's sort of gotten off to a slow start, believe it or not. tends to be more of a sort of a hurry up and wait, where everything, you have all of this tension and all of this buildup, and then the first few weeks are really spent on kind of the budget and finances. And so we've seen some various building department bills and licensing bills, and we've been watching them closely. We've been down at the Capitol attending our association meetings with the League of Cities and Towns and others. But right now, it's been relatively quiet for the city, and I should knock on wood if there's wood close to me, and that's the way we want to keep it. You know, currently we're not running a bill this year. Last year we were running the renewable energy bill, but we're not proactively running a bill this year. So we really are on defense, and so we're in the mode of see something, say something. We have all sorts of our various officials at the city that are on trade associations, you know, attending their meetings, doing the right things, going through the paces. But right now we're just sort of waiting for the chips to fall and see where they land. You know, we're in daily contact with Representative Tim Quinn and our senator, and working closely with the county and others in the chamber down at the Hill.
Okay, I wanted to ask you also, one of the items is a request to approve the disposition of city property. We're talking about Park Avenue, Woodside Avenue, Three Kings Drive. So what does this do for the property owners? They get a larger lot?
This is actually the affordable housing as well.
Oh, okay.
So there's two different items on that, because the property down there is actually co-owned by both the city and the RDA. So we have two different staff reports, because you have to have both bodies vote to sell that property to the new buyers.
So why are we doing this?
This is the Woodside Phase 1.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, these are the addresses for the Woodside Phase 1 project.
Ah, okay. All right. So it's not... It's just for the units themselves.
That's correct.
Okay. It's not, because sometimes we have small parcels.
Sure.
Right. That people
right.
can.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, guys. Or anything else you want to?
Yeah, just one thing. I did want to say thank you to particularly the city staff, but everyone in the community that worked over the Sundance Film Festival. You know, from our perspective, we made some changes this year, particularly in Old Town. Trying to protect some residential areas and trying to improve traffic flow and other elements to the extent that we could. And it really does take a village. There are lots of city employees that are just resting these few days, like many of us are, but long nights. We had some snow in the middle of the festival, and we're just very thankful for the community's patience. We're very thankful for the Sundance Film Festival. It was sort of a wonderful experience. We're very inspired coming out of that. A lot of work went into it, so we just wanted to say thank you.
Well, since you brought it up, I'm going to follow up with that, because you know, I mean, there's a sense that things were slower, Main Street wasn't as busy, you know, that we may see the economic numbers down. Is that okay with everybody?
Well, I've heard that myself, and right now it's just sort of anecdotal. I don't have any sort of evidence. It's just sort of anecdotal, and I've listened to the radio myself. I, you know, was moving around town and riding the bus and driving a little during the festival. It did appear to me to be running a little bit smoother, but I don't know about the sort of the economic impacts. I will say, though, I did appreciate yesterday hearing Allison Kulo, the executive director of the Historic Park City Alliance, when she said, you know, let's not forget that we've had 5 years in a row of year-over-year tax increase, best years ever. And then last year alone, I think, was the community's highest, you know, grossing year ever. So to think that we're going to be able to sustain that, I think is a perilous notion almost, because it's not really reality. But no one wants to see a dip in the economy. No one wants to see a recession. But remember, every year, if we're growing and we're expanding and we're having year-over-year sales taxes, so too come the impacts associated with those. And so it's a balancing act, and I appreciated Allison's sort of poised approach to say, let's make sure we take a minute and reflect here. But that being said, you know, I obviously hope no one's having a hard time paying their rent as a result or anything like that. You know, we obviously put a lot of time and effort and money and infrastructure and labor into Old Town and into Prospector and our business districts. And so we are really proud of the festival this year and all the hard work that went into it.
Okay. Hey, Matt, Jason, thanks for your time this morning. It's 8:33. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, at the last Park City Board of Education meeting, the Park City School District's Chief Operating Officer, Mike Tanner, gave a comprehensive update on the security measures that he's put in place at our schools. He joins us now in the studio with a recap of sort of that presentation. Good morning. Thanks for being here.
Good morning.
Let's start off with an overview of the elementary schools and how security measures are working out there. We've got all of the school grounds now fenced in. The office lobby vestibules are in place as well?
That's right. Yeah, we've spent quite a bit of time and resources in trying to harden especially the elementary facilities early on. And we can't talk about all of measures, of course. We don't want the bad guys defeating our countermeasures, but we do have secure vestibules, which now kind of lock anybody from the outside from getting into the inside of our schools, along with a background check when folks walk in and present an ID. And we also have cameras in our facilities, along with some other hardening devices throughout the schools that help us quite a bit in keeping the elementary schools safe.
Yeah, and basically you just can't walk in anymore.
I mean,
because you could at many of the schools.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that we've had to go that direction, mm-hmm. but that's the state of the art these days, that we have a secure vestibule for folks to get checked in before they're let into the school itself.
Yeah, and then what's happening with the active shooter drills? Are we continuing with those?
You know, it's one of those things where we have to balance the security of our children and their mental well-being in the classrooms. And so we do lockdown drills pretty regularly, and we have to do one drill per month, a safety drill. One of those has to be an active drill for shooters every year now. And we continue down that pathway. But the reality in which we inject into those situations is way played down. It's really, we don't have a person walk in with a fake gun. We're not trying to scare the kids. We're simply trying to prepare them for, in the event that we do have a bad guy get into one of our buildings, how they can best keep themselves safe.
Yeah, I mean, do you think they're helpful? I mean, we hear so much about the anxiety in kids today. I mean, are we just creating more of that?
Yeah, we're really sensitive to that, and that's why we try to play it down. The reality is schools are very safe places to be, and the statistics, if you look at them, say that getting attacked in a school by an outside person is about as likely as getting struck by lightning twice in the same day. So we try to start out with that first footprint, and then we also then follow the statistics in securing our schools. And the outside threat, while it exists, is really not where the majority of the threat lies in most school incidents. If we look through the statistics that were recently published by the U.S. Secret Service, 80% of the threats inside school are generated inside the school. And so our dollars and our time, we think, are best spent in behavioral management, bullying prevention type issues, along with we've started internal threat assessment, that if we do have something that starts to emerge within the school, we have a methodical way of addressing that problem and getting the child the help that they need.
You've also been focusing on how to secure the high school. You say that you've narrowed down a good plan to address the school and its many access points, which is, I guess, the biggest challenge. And you've also addressed some of the measures to make those class changes between Treasure Mountain Junior High School and the high school safer. Can you talk about some of the progress you've made there?
Yeah, sure. One of the biggest things, I've been here full-time for about 6 months, and one of the things that when I did my initial security assessment that really raised the hair on the back of my neck was the frequent movement of students between Treasure Mountain and the high school. Mm-hmm. And the fact that many of the doors were unsecured and the kids were coming and going as they pleased and really enjoyed an open campus with multiple doors. And while we'd like to keep that footprint going into the future, it's just not reality with what we're seeing from a security perspective. So our security committee, which was assembled, we've met 4 times now. The first meeting was in September. One of the first topics we addressed was the security between those two schools. And so we have a number of measures that we're in the process of putting in place now. I'm not at liberty to discuss those, but to help secure that pathway between the two locations. And there's also some things that we're looking at, a beta test for some advanced scanning for potential weapons being brought into the school in the future. So that beta test will be going on, we think, March or April.
So have we locked down some of those access doors then to the high school, and then they're required to come in through the front vestibule?
We have, and what we're looking at doing for next school year is having our students funneling through 3 smartly placed entrances for the majority of the day. And those will have some advanced security measures associated with them. Excuse me. Our parents and vendors who visit the school will come through our secure vestibule, which is in the process of being installed right now at the main entrance of the high school.
Yeah, so eventually, though, ninth grade is going to be in the high school, we believe. I mean, that's been certainly, I think, one of the number one goals of this master planning committee. So at that point, then, that should kind of just go away.
We know? Hope. We hope, right. And that is one of the tenets that has emerged from the public with our master planning process, that ninth grade will be included in the high school. But that might be a couple of years before we get to that point that the construction allows us to walk down that pathway. So in the interim, we want to make sure that facilities are secure.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know in 6 months how you could say, but maybe how students and visitors are changing their behaviors. I mean, have you seen that?
You know, I think it's just human nature for a high school age student to try to make the shortest point between A and B. And if that involves going out a side door, they're likely to do that. So we have to put some measures in place to discourage that behavior. But I do think there's a heightened awareness, both from the public and from the students, about the potential for outside threats at the school. And we do see some behavior modification that's beneficial.
You'd also mentioned at the board meeting that there are some technical security systems in place. What can you tell us about those?
Yeah, you know, there's some really, really neat stuff that allows us to, in the background, have some really sophisticated countermeasures in place that aren't apparent to the public. And we like it that way because we want to have a very welcoming educational environment, but are very powerful. And I mentioned one of the scanning technologies that's out there that we might employ at these entrances if the beta test is correct. That would allow us to pick up on any student or anybody who's walking in with a weapon. We have that in place. There are also some artificial intelligence applications that are out there. A local Park City company is a leader in this, and that would allow us to, instead of having an eyeball watching multiple cameras, a security person, we could have artificial intelligence watching that same camera feed and looking for behavioral patterns that are consistent with some type of criminal activity.
So we've put a lot of money and time into this, and I guess it's reality, huh?
Yeah, it's a multi-pronged approach. You know, only one of those pieces is the physical security of the building, but we also are looking at behavioral aspects and procedural aspects and enhancing our communications and our relationships with our first responders. And I'm glad to say that effort is really gelling over the last 6 months, and I think we'll have a significantly improved security and posture in place for the next school year.
Okay. Just a heads up that we have another report of the elk there right next to the road at St. Mary's. So please give the elk some room and be prepared for a slowdown there on 224. What about an update on the bus driver hiring efforts? Are you still looking for drivers?
We are. And if anybody can offer us some help, we'd really appreciate that. It's the driver shortage is just a reflection of the hot economy we have right now. We do have a couple folks in the pipeline, but we're always looking for folks, and we hope to get ourselves back to full health by the next school year.
Yeah, so are these full-time jobs or just substitute drivers you're looking for?
You know, there's a combination of both. We put in a budget request for next year to increase the number of full-time benefited driver positions, so we hope that helps. We're always looking for substitutes because just the nature of student transportation has some peaks and valleys in the logistics of driver timing. So we can always use part-timers, but we'll do the training, and the pay is pretty decent, and the job has a lot of flexibility, and the people who are driving there have been doing it for a long time, so they must really like it.
Yeah. I mean, what's required to be able to drive a school bus? What kind of
training you mentioned? It's funny. When I talk to the drivers, I tell them that they're my favorite employee group of the whole school district, and these folks are managing very challenging traffic situations, weather, behavioral issues in the back of the buses, and keeping these kids safe. And more importantly, they're the first face that the children see that represents the school district in the morning. And so a nice smile walking up the stairs really sets a good tone for the children throughout the day. And having a great bus driver really is a wonderful thing for the district.
Yeah. How difficult is it to drive a bus?
Well, you have to have a CDL license, so there's a checkout requirement along with that. We have a two-month checkout process, which involves just driving logistics and, you know, how do you get safely navigate a huge bus through all the canyon areas that we have here, you know, along with all the CDL requirements of the bus breaks down, what are your requirements. There's drug testing associated with it as well, make sure the driver is good to go. And so a lot of pieces to get a driver checked out safely.
Yeah, but, I mean, are they pretty easy? I mean, it's just stop and go? I mean, or is it, I guess you just have to get used to the length, huh, and the size.
Exactly. And as you know, as we get up into some of our neighborhoods here, particularly in the elevations, it's really a challenge to navigate that bus safely through the tight roadways.
Yeah. And are the athletic teams now still using contracted transportation services?
They are. And that's been pretty successful for us. It's been about budget neutral for us as we look at it. We would like to bring those functions back in-house just because we have control over the quality of the drivers and the vehicles that are being used. And so that's one of our goals for next year and one of the reasons why we asked for additional benefited positions for next year so we can bring that function back in-house.
Okay. Mike, anything else you wanted to mention?
No, we think that the security efforts are moving forward well for the district, and we hope to have a really nice security posture in place for the community for the next school year.
Okay, Mike Tanner, Chief Operating Officer for Park City School District. Appreciate your time this morning.
Thanks. Take care.
Well, the Mountain Mediation Center, along with Utah Humanities, will be hosting two community conversations this month. In the studio with details, I have Gretchen Lee, Executive Director of the Mountain Mediation Center, along with Chris Campbell, who will be part of the conversation discussing gender identity. Good morning to both of you. Thanks for being here.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Gretchen, why don't you start by just telling us when and where these conversations are taking place?
Yeah, so this is going to be part of a five-part series that we'll be doing, but the first two are around gender identity this Thursday and February 27th, so 2 weeks from now on Thursday, 6 to 7:30 at the Christian Center, and we will be providing food.
That's good. So this is just two of five, and then the other three would be on a different topic? Is that the idea?
Or? Yes, that's the idea. What we're trying to do is part of our work with Park City's social equity plan. We have been engaged to facilitate a series of five conversations. So these are the first two, and then we'll have three more upcoming in the spring, and we're working in the right now we're planning those right now.
Okay, and then why did you choose this topic?
For a variety of different reasons. Chris, you might be able to talk a little bit more about it, but there was a film, a Sundance film. We got community screening tickets for it, and that initially got us the idea. But then we've had some participants in our previous conversations who also wanted to pursue this topic a little bit.
So what was the film?
The film was Mucho Mucho Amor, which is about Walter Mercado, who is a psychic and also really pushed gender expression, especially in the Latinx population, and freed up and allowed people to really start to explore that a little bit more.
Right. It was kind of culture. Our Liberace is what it was described to as me.
Yeah, exactly.
So is this going to be a panel forum, or is it how are the evenings going to work?
No, it will not be a panel. Mountain Mediation, we see our role as facilitating the conversations, and it's part of our bigger work of around restorative justice. There's a huge component. We deal with conflict, and in the restorative justice, there's a prevention side of not just resolving conflict, but the prevention side. And a huge part of that is community building. And around the community building, one of the essential elements is circles and circle conversations and allowing people to basically have a voice and to be heard. So these conversations are intended to have citizens be heard and have a voice. We're not trying to change anybody's mind. Mountain Mediation is not trying to educate people, but we're trying to get people from different backgrounds in the same room having a conversation.
So you'll, Mountain Mediation then as facilitators then will ask a question?
There's gotta be
some process, right?
Yes, there's a total process, and it's we will conduct these in circles, and we will be asking questions and give everybody an opportunity to voice their opinion.
Okay, and then what's your role in this, Chris?
So my role in this is, I got frustrated with all the polarization that's happening in society, and I started to realize that the only way to do something about that is to start to take action. And the actions I'm taking are, how do I get in touch with people from other circles, people whose worldviews that I don't understand? How do I get into a room with them and sit and talk and seek some understanding, learn how to see them as people instead of just that idiot spouting nonsense, right? And so I've started to attend some of these conversations that Mountain Mediation has put on. I've attended some conversations also at my church, Mountain Life Church, and I'm really finding this process of sitting in a room with people with a variety of opinions in a nice, safe space, giving everybody a chance to speak from their own experiences is really powerful in combating that polarization. It allows us to see each other as the complex humans that we are and not just that one-sided, a vision that we can get to if we get sucked into Facebook comments or other other nasty places in the internet, right?
Yeah, so what would you like to tell people about gender identity?
So I'd like to get out of the abstract soundbite, and I would like to get into what is personal experience of gender? How are all of us trapped in our own or society's expectations of gender? How can we free ourselves to be our best, unique, colorful selves and not get trapped into particular boxes?
Our language kind of boxes us in, doesn't it?
It does indeed. It does indeed. So as a, you know, as a trans man, it's particularly important to me to let people see what my journey, what my experience is like. I know it's hard if you haven't talked with somebody to understand why they might go through something like that. So for me, I engage in these conversations as well so people can come and ask me questions and learn more about my experience.
Yeah. And will you be sharing kind of your story then? I mean, is that part of this?
I'll share a little bit of it. These circles are really meant to give everybody a chance mm-hmm. to speak, so I don't want to dominate any part of the conversation. So I'll take my turn and also listen to other people's perspectives as well.
Yeah. So do you have a happy story to tell, though?
I do. You know, it's easy when you are in the closet, if you will, to think that people aren't going to accept you for who you are, right? There's a lot of risk and a lot of fear sometimes, regardless of what your particular closet is. You know, there are even people these days that are closeted, if you will, about religion, that don't feel comfortable sharing their religious views out in the world because there's so much, you know, animosity. But what I have found is when I open up and I'm vulnerable and share my story, people have come and supported me in the most amazing ways and the most unlikely people. So I'm finding that when I can bravely show my true self, that I've been rewarded in amazing ways.
Can we talk a little bit about the number of legislative bills that we think might be coming that deal with gender identity? Are you guys aware of some of that? Everything from withholding hormonal treatment and surgery until somebody is 18 years old. One of them, bill we've heard about, is Representative Brad Dawes' transgender health bill that still we don't see is numbered yet, but it resembles bills that are popping up across the country, basically preventing trans kids from having surgery or receiving hormone therapy. While his bill would do that, it would allow for puberty blockers, medications that basically put puberty on hold. I mean, is that something that you could get behind, Chris?
So I haven't seen the language in his bill yet. The rumors concern me for sure for a variety of reasons. One is I don't think the government should be dictating in general what people do with their bodies. I think, you know, kids can make with parental guidance and appropriate guidance from therapists and doctors can make appropriate decisions for them from a medical standpoint. You know, there was a tanning bill in the legislative session that was going to disallow tanning for all kids under the age of 18. Right now, it's the law that you need parental approval or parental consent for that. And then there was a bill that said, well, we just shouldn't allow kids to tan at all, right? And that bill, thankfully, was voted down. And I think something along the lines of the trans hormone blocker surgery, that sort of bill, should be voted down for the same reasons. I could also go into why I think it's important medically, but I think for me, fundamentally, it comes down to our personal choice and individual choice.
Well, tell me the medical concerns you got.
I think, and this is where I'm interested in sharing my story as well, I think people don't understand medically what it means to be trans and don't understand sort of how deep that runs. I think it's easy for people to say, oh, it's just a feeling and feelings come and go and you're a teen and, you know, moods all over the place and hormones are all over the place. And I don't think they understand just how deep and existential it is. And I think they don't understand how hard it is to navigate in society when you're not allowed to navigate as yourself.
Mm. Troy Williams from Equality Utah has said that he's also watching out for something happening in other states by the Alliance Defending Freedom. It's leading a nationwide campaign to prevent transgender girls from competing with other girls in high school sports. Are you aware of that happening across across the country.
I've heard a little bit about that. I haven't looked into the details.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the Alliance filed a federal discrimination complaint on behalf of girls in Connecticut who competed in track and field, saying that the state's policy on transgender athletes has cost them top finishes and possibly college scholarships. So I think
it's really important to have this discussion out in the open and not to jump to big black and white either, or, you know, no trans kids should be able to compete at all, or they should be able to compete freely, whatever. There are issues, right, of, in particular sports, strength makes a difference as far as how successful you are. Now, in some sports, like wrestling, we figured out how to handle that by doing weight classes, right? We don't let the 200-pound guys wrestle the 100-pound guys. We recognize that would not be fair. I think that we can come up with similar nuanced solutions to be inclusive of trans kids, give them opportunities to compete, and make sure that the playing field gives all kids, you know, girls, boys, trans girls, trans boys, everybody a chance to compete fairly.
Well, it sounds like a great opportunity for people to get in on the conversation again. The first two of this five-part series happening tomorrow, 6 to 7:30 p.m. at the Christian Center of Park City, and then again February 27th. Anything else you guys would like to add about
it? No, I think that's it, but please come out and join us.
Okay. Gretchen Lee and Chris Campbell, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Thanks.